Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, whoop.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 18, week 12, part 2. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson. Itching for that hog money this weekend?
Oh, this is the greatest day in hog history. We have declared our independence from the dumpster fire. We are out of mediocrity. Our nose is pointed up in the air, not down in the ground anymore. It's the greatest day in hog history I can remember since we lost to the Citadel and we fired Jack Crow. I mean, it's been that great of a day. 25 years.
So I assume, congratulations.
Thank you.
So I assume that you like them against Miss State in a pretty good letdown spot for the Bulldogs.
Well, it was already a pretty good spot, you know, because Mississippi State's coming off of a cover slash almost won against the number one, now the number one team in the nation. They got the Egg Bowl next week, and you know, Ole Miss isn't being pushed around by anybody. You know, and Mississippi State's already got 7 wins on the season, so they're already bowl eligible. They, you know, there's no telling, you know, and Dan Mullen's name is being sprinkled around every open position, and I guess now, I guess maybe here in a couple of weeks, he can be his name can be sprinkled in my backyard. But yeah, and the number was inflated, and the Hogs look like they're lost, you know, and so this was a really good spot for the Razorbacks, and I just feel like it got a little bit better today with sort of the fan base rejoicing that it kind of got what it wanted. The players are feeling like they're on an island by themselves, fighting for a coach that recruited them. It's all good for an 11 a.m. kick, where I think Mississippi State may be sleepwalking.
Yeah, I mean, but Jeff Long out means Bielema is next, right? No doubt.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's I'll leave it to the people of Hogville that are watching his house for the real estate sign that's going to go up in his front yard. But I mean, Jeff Long wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't. He was actually a really good athletic director as far as supporting the players and supporting the athletics. And, you know, we were kind of on the upswing with basketball, and there was a lot of other sports that were doing great. But, you know, the big deal was is that he just didn't connect the way Frank Broyles did with state senators, with governors, with all 75 counties. I mean, you have to know the state of Arkansas about how the dichotomy is, where it's one school, one football program for the entire state. Same way with Nebraska, where you have to be sort of a politician and you have to, you know, you have to grease a lot of backs and get along with everybody. You just can't come in and turn off ex alumni, turn off ex players, and, you know, kind of elbow people that have been with the program forever out. And you're just not going to get along, and someday it's going to catch up to you. And that's what happened.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that 5 years ago, there were 3 SEC hires, and you hired Arkansas hired Bielema, then Tennessee hired Butch Jones, and Kentucky hired Mark Stoops. And guess who's going to make it through their 5th year? Mark Stoops. So found that pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I think that this. I mean, so is Austin Allen going to be playing quarterback? I'm assuming Cole Kelly's going to be drunk, right?
You know what's funny is I was texting this with some friends. He's on the injury report, but he's not on the injury report as suspended. He's on the injury report as legal. I don't think I've seen that. Like, you're either suspended or it just says legal on his injury report, which I think is hilarious. 20-year-old kid buying shots for everybody on Dixon Street. Love him.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I was leaning towards Arkansas. Such a letdown spot for Miss State. I was afraid of their run defense, though, is really what's giving me pause. Has it been better of late, or is there anything there that
they're playing inspired? It's still flag football inspired, but they're playing with a little bit more spirit than they were. I don't know. What can we say? You know, we had to come back in the second half to beat Coastal by 1 point and a miraculous comeback against Ole Miss. It's just, you know, we're grasping at straws here, but it's a really great spot to fade Mississippi State. But, you know, maybe all this news, they come out and remember how to tackle.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll take a deeper look at that now. I mean, I was eyeing it up, but that's what was scaring me. But maybe this gives them the motivation that they need. Let me touch on NFL real quick. The one thing that I'm going to have out in the morning, so by the time this podcast comes out Thursday afternoon, this will already be out on the Sports Action app, but I'm putting together a future NFL midseason futures piece looking for some long shots. And essentially, the thinking there is if you, the AFC is a dumpster fire. Every single division in the AFC is negative and has a negative net plus minus overall. And the sixth team in the AFC right now is 5-4, Buffalo, who just named Peterman their starting quarterback for a rookie starting for the first time on the road. And you bench your mobile quarterback against the best pass rush in the NFL. Doesn't make sense to me. But so the thing is that the Chargers are 3-6. If they win that game, they go to 4-5 and they're one game back of the Bills and they would have the breaker. The team that's favored actually to get there, I think, given their schedule, and is the Ravens. And they're 155-1 right now, which is crazy because the Raiders are 50-1. But the Raiders, they played the Patriots and the Ravens already beat the Raiders. So the Raiders have to beat out the Ravens by a game. The Ravens also already beat the Dolphins, who are 4-5. Their schedule's so easy. I mean, it's a joke. They're going to get in the playoffs, and they're 155-1.
Right.
So look out for
that. A year ago, the Dolphins were in the same position. They started running people over with a 500 record, and they were about 80-1. And here's the deal with 155-1 on the Ravens. You're going to get the first weekend of the wild card, and then they may end up going to play Pittsburgh or go play New England, which I'll be waiting for the Stucky tweet that says this is the real AFC championship game. But you have so much wiggle room to hedge on 155-1. Similar to the Dolphins were 80-1 last year, and you just knew that they were on a run to make the playoffs, at least get one game in so you can hedge it all.
Yeah, I mean, I even would think about recommending the Chargers, but they're 3-6. But, you know, they play the Raiders again. They already beat the Raiders. So they would, you know, and then they play the Bills this weekend. They could have, but the problem is they're 2-5 in the conference. So like if they tie the Ravens, they're not going to win that tiebreaker. So they, I mean, they'd have to pretty much go 7-0. And they play at Dallas, but granted, Elliott's going to be out. So, you know, they're at the Chiefs too. So I don't think that they can go, you know, 6-1. Maybe they get a 9-7. It's tough. And I mean, they'll find a way to lose another game somehow. But they're 155-1 too.
I'm looking forward to your piece just on the NFC because I'm trying to count the number of teams that aren't in the playoff race in the NFC. I mean, when I see Aaron Rodgers warming up and I hear that the Packers are 80-1, I mean, is there any team that I'm counting out besides, I don't know, the Giants? I have no clue who's going to win that conference. I mean, the Saints look good, the Vikings look good, but could you not foresee them just having a tanking December? I could.
Yeah, it'll already be out. I'm looking at the Lions. So The Lions look great in the red zone last week. They got Taylor Decker back on the offensive line. That was so many of their problems. And I mean, they're sitting at 5-4. They're really a 7-2 team. I mean, they should have beat the Steelers. They should have beat the Falcons. Their schedule's really easy.
I haven't read your piece, and I was going to say that I think they only have one team that's above 500 for the rest. Maybe it's two teams, but I think they only have one team above 500 the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, their schedule is they're at the Bears, big game, because that's a division and conference game this weekend. If they win that, they're 6-4. Then they get the Vikings at home. They already won at the Vikings. It could be a huge game, especially if the Vikings lose to the Rams. And then they're at the Ravens. So the good thing is I take the Ravens and the Lions. One of them is going to get a win there. But that game, if you run simulations, it really doesn't even mean anything overall. Like the percentages go down like 10%. It's an out-of-conference game. But, then they got the Bucks. They finished with the Bucks, Bears, Bengals, and Packers at home. So, you know, it's a really gettable schedule. If they can win at Chicago and not fall into a trap, I think that the Lions are going to make it. Now, the problem that they have is that they lost to the Falcons in that bullshit game, and that could be the tiebreaker. But I think the Seahawks are going to fade here. But that bullshit 1 yard could end up costing them the playoffs.
That was... How many dome teams can in the NFC can we get into the playoffs?
I know, seriously. They also lost to the Saints, too, so if it comes down to a tiebreaker with them, so that's their problem. The only other teams I considered, and then, like, you know, the really long shots are the Reds. So if the Redskins, if they can somehow win at the Saints this weekend. Then the rest of their schedule is they play the Giants twice, the Cardinals and Broncos at home. So, I mean, if they win this weekend and get the 5-5, that's four free wins. And then you're 9-5. And then you're at the Cowboys without Elliott, at the Chargers for your other two games. So, I mean, could they get the 10-6? It all comes down to if they can upset the Saints. Otherwise, if they can't, they're done. But if you want to get in front of that, you know, maybe they have some value. But anyway, I digress. Look for that piece tomorrow. One thing I wanted to bring up before we get into our first segment of Look Ahead, Look Away is the weather this weekend. So there's going to be storms all over and wind. Do you have any comments there?
Yeah, there's just a band of you're right. You're right. We were looking at this earlier today, and there's just a band of 20-mile-an-hour winds. All you need to check your winds. And the only thing I have to say is check your wind direction if you have a way to do that, because there's a big difference between wind blowing one way, because that helps every other quarter, and crosswinds, which is bad for quarterbacks that have weak arms, bad for kickers that have, you know, teams that have terrible accuracy at kicking. So make sure when you see 20 to 25 mile an hour winds, see if it's one of those kinds of stadiums that has crosswinds. I believe we brought up Kansas earlier. We talked about Purdue earlier today. So, I mean, get a hold of that information. It's vital this time of year when you have one of these kind of weekends.
Yeah. I can't remember the source, but I saw an analysis done, and I did one myself one year. But I had to do it manually. But I saw a longer term analysis where if you looked at all games with 20 mile an hour winds, the ones with crosswinds had six less points on average scored than the ones that didn't have crosswinds and 20 mile an hour winds. Uh-huh. You know, so that speaks to the field goals, you know, the throws, and you're not going to get a benefit in two quarters. So, yeah, that's something to look out for, the wind direction, where it's going, where it's coming from, and then where the stadium faces is really important. Sports Insights has stadium orientation and weather. So there's a couple different tools that you can see out there. So that's a really good point.
And I'll try to mention them as we go through the games here. I'll try to keep up and mention them here for each specific game.
Okay. So as we do always with the Gen and Juice, we have two parts each week. The first part, we look back at the previous weekend, talk about what we learned, what it means going forward, and we look into the weekday games. For the second part, which is tonight, we released each Thursday, we divide it into four segments, the first of which is Look Ahead or Look Away, and that's when we go into the best situational spots on Saturday's card. We'll get into FCS or no, which is the second segment. A lot of great FCS versus FBS matchups this weekend. I'm really excited. Got a lot of good stuff for that.
Me too.
And then we'll go to the top 25 rundown and cover any top 25 teams that we didn't cover in those previous two segments. And then we'll finish with a three and out. So first and second down, I'll have two questions for Colin. And then we'll finish with our Moneyline Underdog Parlay. So let's get into Look At or Look Away. Central Florida, we'll start there. You know, they have USF on deck. They're laying 14 at Temple, who is 5-5 on the year. Does UCF care here? Temple's playing better of late. Do you have any thoughts on this game?
Well, to get started, we got 15 mile an hour crosswinds, but it's only 15 miles an hour, and I'm not sure that's going to be Temple's game anyways. UCF, their explosiveness comes on the ground too, so not sure that's a factor. But what is UCF's mindset right now that the college football playoff rankings keep coming out every week and they're just stagnant? They're not going to ever make it, you know, they're not going to make any headway. They're not going to jump anybody. No matter what they do, nothing's going to happen. So if they had any hopes and dreams on any of that, you know, maybe that's kind of shot a little bit this week. Also, they have overlooked South Florida, huge game, you know, if South Florida would have kept, you know, being undefeated, you know, for the remainder of the year. But still, UCF could be looking forward to that. And then after that game, they're going to have to play Memphis or I think SMU's could still, this weird scenario where they could make it. But, you know, Temple doesn't have the stats to contain the explosiveness. Now, Temple plays good defense and they play even better at home, but they don't really have the stats to contain the explosiveness. But the one thing that they do well is they're 22nd in the country at sacking the quarterback. The problem is UCF is 8th in the country in sacks allowed, which means the biggest thing that Temple can do, UCF's good at defending it. So I'm a little – there's going to be money on Temple on my side. I don't think it's going to be one of those official plays you'll see come across. But it's you know, I think if Temple can get to the quarterback, they can make this – a long night. But they don't have what SMU has to be able to trade punches with this UCF team. So I think we need a combination of getting the quarterback and UCF's head not being into it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see much here, but I would agree that with the wind and the motivation, you know, it might be a good spot for a home dog in Temple, who's playing better as of late. Temple would have extra prep, too, since they played. I mean, that's something to note. But, yeah, I don't see much from my perspective, but those are good takes. The second spot that I had here, we'll tease this with the CW9. So Colin's piece on Friday will include Georgia Tech and Duke. Georgia Tech has Georgia on deck after the Va-Tech upset classic sandwich. So look out for that to see if Colin does like the situational spot in Duke or if he likes the matchup of Georgia Tech. The next spot I have on here is Washington. So Washington is laying 17 at home against Utah. They're coming off that loss, devastating loss to Stanford, which pretty much ended their season. You know, killed their hopes of a Pac-12 title, killed their hopes of a playoff. They're not really playing for anything now. The only thing that they have left to look forward to is to ruin their in-state rival Washington State's season next week. Do they care about this game against Utah?
Don't they care? I think they care about the game only if Stanford loses to Cal, right? Then Washington would have the tiebreaker over Wazoo. I don't know. I think.
If Stanford loses to Cal, then Washington is alive.
Right, which I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And I don't think Washington's counting on that happening. Do they care about Utah?
Well, they don't care about Utah, but then again, you know, Utah's missing their best player, Darren Carrington, II, and Utah's offensive line is falling apart. They're outside the top 100 in sacks, and Washington's defense is, you know, legit and can get to the quarterback. So this is one of those look-away scenarios where I don't want either side of this. I mean, Utah's
smells like an under, right?
I do like the under in this game, even though it's not a weather factor, but it is, you know, being played in the state of Washington, so that's the weather's always bad.
Yeah, and I would look under here. I mean, I think that I don't see Utah moving the ball much. Hopefully, they don't turn it over 7 times. but yeah, I also don't think Washington's going to come out fired up for this game. But I think it could be ugly, and the under's a look here. The next spot that I have is a good one. Auburn, they're playing Louisiana Monroe. They're laying 36, 37. I played La Monroe plus 37 earlier in the week. They're coming off of a bye. Auburn's obviously coming off of that huge win against Georgia. They have Alabama on deck, enormous sandwich spot. And let me just throw this matchup out there. The over the last 4 to 5 weeks, Auburn has had one of the worst kick and punt coverage units in the entire country. And Daniel Carlson wasn't able to, you know, kick touchbacks last week, and they haven't been able to cover anyone. So they, you know, were trying these pooch kicks, and it's been a major problem. I mean, I think that over the, let's see. Yeah, I think they're giving up, I can pull up the stats here, over 40 yards per kick return over the last 3 weeks or so. And La Monroe has the number 3 ranked kick returner in the country in Marcus Green. And he's the number 25 overall punt returner. You know, and if you just look back at some of Auburn's games, they gave up that punt return to LSU, which really turned the game around. Georgia had a couple of big returns as well last week, but they've given up a couple touchdowns for returns this year. So that's something to keep an eye on, that, you know, if you're trying to cover 37, you know, and you're getting good field position, or you just break one, you know, that could be the difference between getting in that number or not. But I think Auburn's going to be flat here, and it won't even come down to that. But that's just something to note. Do you any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, that's a really good analysis, especially with the kick return, because ULM's kick return success rate overall is 14th, and you're right. The returner they have is Marcus Green. He's fantastic. So, you know, the capping angle I was coming at, there was a stat that came out of this game, and I was just like, you have to be kidding me. I double-taked. This is one of those things where, you know, when I'm doing the Sunday morning coffee and I load up all my numbers and I'm writing this piece, you know, Saturday night or Sunday morning around 1 a.m., some of the numbers I say, well, I must have switched a team because there's no way that power rating could be this way. So while I have this game around like 35, S&P Plus actually has this at 24, a spread of 24, which is shocking me because Auburn is, you know, I mean, legitimately should be the number six team in the college football playoff ranking. So when I started doing a little bit more investigating, it's S&P's offensive rating of 13th around the ULM program. So they really love the offense that they've been trying to put up. Now, I mean, the flip side of that is Auburn's defense is, you know, one of the best in the nation, which is why we rode them last week. And you and I both rode them. And I wrote about them in the CW9 about how they're going to get in the backfield all day. So, you know, I think if you're going to play on this game, I know Stuck and I have already taken a hit on this, and I took one pretty early, and so did you, but I think you might want to sit around and wait because this is one of those things that could get to 38. I mean, as stupid as it sounds, it could be a key number. That whole kick return, there could be a special teams play. You know, there's no wind going on here, only 10 mile an hour, but, you know, something crazy like this could get you that cover at 38. So I would sit around because I don't think it's going to go down to 34.5 unless sharp money just wakes up on Saturday morning and decides to whack it. But, you know, I would just kind of, you know, tease and wait around and see if you can get a 38 on this because last year's game was a 51-point win by Auburn. So this has potential to get out of hand, but ULM at the same time, they can trade punches if Auburn's flat.
Yeah, and just to round off those stats, I have them here. So over the last four games, Auburn's allowing an average of 41.4 yards per kick return and an average of 31.2 yards per punt return. And they've given up a kick return for a touchdown to Arkansas, a punt return for a touchdown to LSU. You know, last week Georgia had a 47-yard return, a 35-yard return, and Carlson hasn't been able to kick it out of the end zone. So Malzahn said he's going like pooch kicks, and you know, so they should have good field position. The other thing is, Lamonore is 5-5, coming off a big win, but they had a bye. They have 2 weeks to prep. It's a terrible spot for Auburn. Lamonore is playing for a bowl eligibility. You know, Auburn is going to sit out. They were talking about, here's another angle on this game, is their running back, what's his name, Kerryon Johnson. He has been, he's getting, I think, on average 30 over the last couple games. But they've been working him, you know, and he's getting stronger as the year goes on. But, you know, that might catch up to him. This is a great week to give him a break. And we're about to get in the FCS or no segment. I mentioned this on the podcast earlier in the week. These teams that have someone, you know, players that are a little banged up, they're gonna set them out this week against these FCS teams or these locals. They want to be fully healthy for essentially their season is Alabama. Even if they lost to La Monroe, their season is still alive. If they lost to Alabama, their season's done.
Yep. So absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, I really like the spot.
Obviously, and then don't forget, this is a ULM team that, I mean, Memphis is ranked, I think, are they in the top 20? I think they might be 21st, so, but whatever. They're a top 25 team in the college football playoff ranking. This is a ULM team that lost to them by 8 at the beginning of the season. They can hang with big boys that can put up points. So I like this. This is a good spot.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, Kerryon Johnson, 32 carries for 167 yards against Georgia. The week before against A&M, 30 carries for 145. I mean, they've been working him. At LSU, he ran 31 times for 156. Against Ole Miss, 28 for 204. I mean, he should be in the Heisman discussion. Jesus. All right. So let's get into – I've been waiting all year for this. The FC Yes or No segment in week 12. This is the week where the SEC teams and some of your ACC teams play cupcakes. I mean, I'm also going to have a piece out on this that comes out on Friday. It just talks about the value that these FCS teams have had against the SEC historically. I can tell you that over the last 6 years, the underdogs against, in this week, you know, the non-Power 5 underdogs against SEC teams, I think 90% of them were FCS teams. I think you had, you know, maybe a, you know, like a La Monroe would fall into that this week. But they are 21-10 against the spread. A couple of the FCS teams have won outright. The SoCon has 29 wins over FBS schools since 1982. 12 have come over the ACC, and we'll get into some of those. There's been 9 FCS wins, straight-up wins over FBS schools this year. There were 10 last year, 9 the year before. The records in 2013, there was actually 16 teams that won. I have a feeling there's going to be a straight-up upset this week. Yep. And we'll get to that game, but we'll start with the one that where it's not going to be, and that's Mercer at Alabama. Alabama's only 40 and a half here. You know, Mercer's 5-5. The thing is, talk about a weird schedule. Mercer played at Auburn earlier in the year. They lost 24-10. So you'd say, well, all right, they were in that game, but Auburn was still breaking in their offense. Remember, and they were coming off that crushing loss to Clemson.
Yeah.
Mercer's 5-5. You know, they're not that good this year. But they're playing Alabama. Alabama's been known to just, I mean, they haven't covered some of these games in recent years. And I would imagine they have some defensive injuries like Fitzpatrick and all over the place. I would imagine they're going to rest before Auburn. That's their season next week. I think there's value with 40.5 and the Bears. What do you think?
Yeah, well, this number's on the move because I made my notes last night at this. It was 43.5. So, I mean, this thing's gone down 3 points today. I'll correct you on Alabama. I don't think they've covered any. I don't think Alabama's covered any of these. Western Kentucky covered by a half point last year. Colorado State covered comfortably this year. And then there was the spot last year. They didn't even come close to covering against one of these FCS schools. This is just not a game where Alabama's, you know, typically going to cover. Now, I mean, Sagarin makes this a 49-point game. And so when I saw 43 last night, I wanted to fire myself, but I said, well, hell, this is 6 points short and maybe we'll get some game day steam. But now I'm looking at it and it's taken a whack of 3 points. So it's down to 40.5. Alabama has made it very clear that, you know, Taglio Bailoa, boy, I got to get that name right before he's a starter. You know, he's going to lead a crew of second stringers that are going to play for Alabama this week. And, you know, Mercer's getting $600,000 to come to this game. They already got $500,000 to go play Auburn. I believe the score was 7-3 at halftime against Auburn, but you're right. Auburn was breaking in the new offense after that. You know, they had a couple of abysmal performances. FCS ratings for Mercer, they are number one in red zone offense.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, they're number one in red zone offense, and they're number 14 in the turnover margin. So the Bears are 5-5, but they can, I mean, they can give this a pretty good run. But my question to you is this just a game, just a bust from the beginning? Is it going to be all the backups in for Alabama and they're so freaking talented that, you know, it's just going to be a busted pocket and then a 60-yard bomb or, you know, just a scramble and just craziness all over the field? I can't even predict what's going to happen here with all the backups.
Yeah, I think there's value. I mean, the one thing I know is that Mercer won't be scared. This is, right. You know, I mean, they went to Auburn, so they had that experience. They went to Georgia Tech, I believe, last year, played them closer a couple years ago. But they're coming. They should be a confident team. They just went to Western Carolina, who we'll get to, pretty much ended their season. So Western Carolina was hoping to go to the playoffs, and they needed that game at home. And Mercer beat them 35-33. You know, so they've had some success on the road. They won at Citadel. You know, so they were at Furman. They played them tough, but that I think they can take a lot from that Auburn game. I just think Alabama's going to be sleeping, and this is the last game of the year for Mercer. You got to keep that in mind. Sometimes with these FCS teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, and Mercer's one of them. This is the last game of the year for their seniors, and the last game of forever.
And for those of you that don't know, with the FCS, they've got their own selection committee, and some of these teams are on the bubble. Not Mercer. We're going to get to one here in a little bit. Some of these teams are on the bubble, and they have to have a good performance to possibly get into that playoff.
Yeah, there's 24 teams, I believe, right? 24 that make it. And well, let's hop ahead to that one. I believe you're referring to Western Carolina.
Yeah.
Who's on the bubble. They just lost to Mercer at home, which really hurt them. But they're now, seven and three on the season?
Yeah, that was a 33-35 game, though. I mean, that one was pretty back and forth, I think, with Western Carolina and Mercer. So
yeah, it was close. They lost at home. But, I mean, if they would have had that game, they would have been in a lot better shape. But now they're definitely on the bubble. You know, they are 7-4 on the year. One thing, I mean, they played at Hawaii earlier in the year and lost 41-18. But, I mean, that was the first game of the season for them on September 3rd. I think it was the second for Hawaii. You know, so they're catching 21.5 at North Carolina. Here, you know, Western Carolina might not be playing for something. You know, it could be the last game of the year for all their seniors. They have a ton of seniors, by the way. But they're still in the bubble, so they'll have that motivation. But last year they were playing for nothing. They were 2-10, and they went to South Carolina and gave them a game. You know, so these a lot of these kids are from the same state. They same thing. You know, they're from in same proximity as South Carolina too last year, and they played South Carolina really close. I think the two touchdowns. So I mean, North Carolina is terrible, but I mean, they're not. I don't think North Carolina is playing for anything. They're 2-8 on the year, 21.5.
I got some good ones. Yeah, I got some good notes for you here. So yeah, it does seem high. So 19 is what the spread would be if you were basing it upon the Sagarin ratings, factoring in North Carolina's home field advantage. So Western, like we said, the Catamounts, right? They have plenty to play for. They're on the bubble for the FCS playoff selection committee. The strength of Western Carolina is in the fact that they have the 12th best rushing attack on offense in all of FCS. Now, I know we're comparing FCS numbers to FBS, but North Carolina is not great at defending the rush. They're 99th in defense rush success rate. They're 75th in defense rush ISO PPP, which means they allow explosive plays. You know, weather's not a factor here, no wind or anything. But Western Carolina, absolutely, with all the motivation in the world and having a rushing attack that can challenge North Carolina, this is a great spot for 21.5 points.
I would agree. And the next spot that I have here, let's go to another ACC team, Citadel. And the Citadel is, they're 5-5 as well. They had a down year this year. I think they won 10 games last year. They're at Clemson. Clemson is laying 47 here. One note that I'll throw in there is that Clemson did see the option the other week and they shut it down in Georgia Tech. That's what they'll see here. Do you have anything for this game? Laying 47.
So 47 was like, I just couldn't believe it. Now, this is the same Citadel team, and a lot of these players were on here 2 years ago, went down and beat South Carolina outright. So there's a couple things to note on here that doesn't have to do with stats. It doesn't have to do with anything. This is the second triple off option offense that Clemson has seen in the last 4 weeks, that Georgia Tech game we mentioned, which they were up 24-3 in that last touchdown, made it a push. But so, you know, the Citadel, they're second in FCS in the rushing attack, of course, because it's triple option. They play it very well. They're very disciplined with it. The question is Clemson going to show up on defense and decide to stop the triple option? There is a number of defensive players, like half the defense is taking the week off. And also something I found extremely interesting about this game. I mean, I'm not going to say Citadel is going to upset them or anything, but Clemson, this is the one time a year they're going to wear their purple jerseys. And this is actually Military Appreciation Day at the Clemson game. And they're playing what's considered to be the military school of the South. So they're catering to a Citadel, you know, military school on Military Appreciation Day. It feels just funky, and I don't know. I think I'm probably going to have a play on Citadel just based on the fact that Clemson has no interest in trying to spot 50-something, 51-something points on the Citadel team.
Yeah, the one thing that I'll say is Clemson had a lot of injuries. They had a couple starters that were out against Florida State. I'm assuming they'll be sitting again this week.
Right.
And, you know, they will pull their starters sooner with South Carolina on deck. The one thing, you know, so I think they're going to come out and play a very vanilla game. The only way that I can see this getting out of hand is their passing offense has been terrible. So if Dabo uses this as like a game to work on their passing attack, and then it's just, you know, they're kind of throw, because I don't think Citadel's corners are going to stay with Clemson. So if they come out and they're trying to work on their deep passing attack all game, then it could get ugly. But I think the value here is with Citadel for sure. Another ACC team. This is probably the funniest spread I've ever seen. Florida State's laying 50. They're laying 50. The most amount of points that Delaware State's terrible, by the way. They're 2-10. They're in the MEAC.
They're bad.
They went to West Virginia earlier this year. They lost 59-16, just as a reference point. Florida State, the most points they've scored all year. All year is 28. The most points Delaware State has scored is 33. Just to put that in perspective, Florida State has not scored more than 28 points all year. And they're laying 50. I think this number was higher. I think it was 53. I mean, that's just a shocking number to me. And I don't know if I want to play Delaware State. Florida State is still isn't covered all year. Right. I don't know. I don't see much. I don't see much here other than Florida State sucks and they looks like they've quit. But what do you see? Anything?
Yeah, well, and I'm hearing rumors of Jimbo going to Texas A&M. So I've only got a couple notes on this game because I had to scroll so far down the Sagarin ratings. I found Delaware State almost dead ranked last in all of the possible football teams that are ranked, like, and I think they were just above like Mississippi Valley State Devil Dogs or something like that. So, you know, the spread should
Delta,
be 50
Delta
Dogs. Sorry about that.
You did so, that earlier.
I know. It's college basketball season. I got to get up with this. So the spread should be 56 according to Sagarin. So it's at 50. I guess it was 53. It's come down a little bit. The question is, can FSU score 50? They've needed the last four games to eclipse 50 points. So if they've needed the last four games, and I know it's Delaware State, but four games to make 50 points, I mean, they're 112th in offensive S&P plus. And I mean, I'm not sure if they lined up in front of tackling dummies for this length of time in a game that they'd be able to score 51 points. So are they really trying to pull this off? And I don't think the answer is yet. They got overlooked to Florida. I don't know what's going on with Jimbo. Team's just a mess.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to bet. Do you know their mascot, Delaware State? Hornets.
What's the chicken? That's Drexel. That's the
hens. The Blue Hens is Delaware. Delaware State, like, it's a little hornet. Has one of the coolest mascot pictures. But, yeah, I mean, you can't bet Florida State. You can't lay 50 with Florida State. And then I don't think you could play Delaware State. I mean, to show you how bad Delaware State was, last year they didn't win a game, and they lost 79-0 at Missouri. So, I mean, that could easily happen here. You could get a running clock. There's lightning. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, they lost 79-0 at Missouri, didn't win a game. And the only games they won this year are, like, to Savannah State, I think, who's terrible also. So this is a bad MEAC team against an angry Florida State team or a team that quit. I don't know. You can't really bet. I don't think you can bet this game.
Right.
So my favorite game of, and I saved this for last, and I think this team's going to win straight up. And I'm catching 19.5. I wanted over three touchdowns, but didn't think I'd get it. Wofford, who is one of the best FCS teams in the country, they're in the top 10. They're going to the playoffs. They are playing at South Carolina. They're catching 19.5. Colin, you already mentioned this. The last time South Carolina played an option offense was 2 years ago on this weekend, and they played the Citadel, and they were laying 20-something, and they lost outright by a point at home. That was the last time they played an option offense. That was, Muschamp has never coached or prepared his team for an option offense in South Carolina.
Yep.
You know, so this is unfamiliar territory for South Carolina, who has Clemson on deck. Wofford's 9-1 on the year. They run they're hard to prepare for. They don't just run an option. You know, they run a triple option, but you know, if you're not used to seeing a triple option regularly, they're not the option you want to see. They will run, you know, they'll run the triple option out of a shotgun with one back, a shotgun with two backs, diamond formations. Just a really effective running team. I think they've ran the ball for over, you know, close to 3,000 yards this year. I think they can win this game straight up. I'm taking over two touchdowns all day long. I'll wait to see if I can get 20-21. What do you got in this game?
Yeah, I echo the same sentiments. Muschamp has, that's had in my notes, you know, he has not been preparing for the option whatsoever. If you look at their schedule, went into some of the practice reports. Muschamp is yelling at people like, we are not thinking about Clemson. We are not going to allow to happen. The Citadel did to us 2 years ago. We're not going to allow that to happen to us again. You know, see, he's very keen on the fact that he doesn't want anybody doing overlook to Clemson, which, you know, if you're going to the University of South Carolina, all you think about is Clemson all the time. So good luck with that. I think if I had to play devil's advocate, which I'm not, because I'm probably going to be on Wofford, they're the number 8 FCS team and they're 9-1 on the season. And I'm not sure if the motivation is to beat an FBS team like South Carolina, which is, you know, pretty close in proximity and a huge win down there for them regionally. But they're already 9-1 on the season and they've got aspirations to win, you know, the FCS playoff. So is the motivation as high as it could be It should be. I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's something that you've seen in the past, these FCS teams that I've backed in this weekend that are going to the playoffs, well, that they'll start their backup quarterback. That's happened before. So they say, you know, we don't want this game. We're scrapping this game, essentially. We want to stay healthy, work on some things, and then get out of Dodge. Because ultimately, this game doesn't mean anything to Wofford's season, right? So they're going to be playing again. They're going to the playoffs. But, you know, I think that given the regional proximity, you know, I think that they might care. I mean, where's Wofford? In Spartanburg, I think. So that's, you know, what, an hour and a half? So, I mean, these kids probably all know each other. Yeah, Wofford's in Spartanburg.
Yeah, not Orangeburg. It's Spartanburg.
And what's Orangeburg?
Orangeburg is, oh man, here we go. Let's continue the pod. I'll look it up.
I mean, I think that they do care. I think it's just too many points. South Carolina, you know, this is just a hard team to prep for, and I think that's going to be the difference. And if Wofford does care, don't be shocked if they win. Game doesn't really mean anything in South Carolina either, right?
South Carolina State, by the way.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that, actually. You taught me something. Orangeburg?
Orangeburg, yep.
Interesting. Okay. all right. So, yeah, I like Wofford. If you play all one, what is there, five? And if you throw La Monroe in there, if you play all six dogs.
Right.
Throw out Delaware State. If you play Mercer, La Monroe, Citadel, Western Carolina, and Wofford, I think you go 3-2 at worst. That's pretty much what happens every year. I mean, you would have went 21-10 doing that the last 6 years.
I tell you what, let's do this for fun before we hop out of this segment, go into top 25. Pick one. I mean, just straight up. Five Dimes is going to put a line out there somewhere because there's some idiot laying a parlay with all these teams. And I think you're going to go Wofford, so I'll go with somebody else, and I'm going to go with Western Carolina.
Okay, I can see either one of them. So,
right,
But I do think Wofford. If you're not preparing for an option, and South Carolina just in a mental, and they've been known to to struggle in these spots. So I mean, they struggled with. They struggled last year with Western Carolina, who was 2-10, and they lost to Citadel the year before. These are all, you know, close regional teams too. So, yeah, and I think that same thing will apply with Western Carolina, North Carolina as well. So, and the good thing with Western Carolina is that they, you know, they will be motivated. They can't throw the game out, and they have a lot of seniors. It could be their last game, so you know that they're going to be up to play for it. So, all right, that's your FCS or no segment. I hope it was as good for you as it was for me. I think we had a lot of good info there. Let's get into the top 25 rundown. We can run through this quickly. UVA at Miami, we talked about earlier in their podcast, talked about the Havoc grade. I think UVA will be sleeping. They're laying 19. And I think Miami's sleeping. I think there's value on UVA, but I also think it's an under game as well. See anything here?
Yeah, definitely an under game. Geez, how many games is Miami going to have at home? I'm really looking forward to this Pitt game next week on a Friday night at 7 o'clock. I have the game 18. It's sitting on 19. I think it's going to trickle back down to 17. There's plenty of money coming in on Virginia right now. It's a big letdown spot for Miami because they just beat, you know, Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. Huge wins at home. But I don't think it's that big of a letdown because they're still at home. You know, this game's an early kick. There's going to be half the capacity in the crowd. I doubt A-Rod will be there with his chain. And so, you know, does Bronco Mendenhall have enough in him to cover this game on the road? And when I started looking at them deeper, they're just abysmal in yards per play. They're 112th in the nation in yards per play. Hurricanes defense can have really a C-minus performance and shut down this Virginia team that ranks 92nd in efficiency and 102nd in explosiveness. You know, they have a decent D, you know, but Miami can just kind of lean on Homer and Rozier's ground game and their explosiveness and be able to get by. And it's probably a 17-point game and you never know what'll happen there at the end, but that's, you know, that's where I have it. And that's where the spread is.
Wins there. this weekend?
Is there what?
Is there going to be winds there this weekend?
No. I'm looking at it now. I think it's like 10-mile-an-hour winds. But, you know, that stadium is funky, that Hard Rock, because I don't think it swirls in there as much as it actually does, because most of the games I watched, those flags on the field goal posts aren't moving at all, even though, you know, some of the reports say there's 10, 15-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already on Virginia. I'll be on the under, too. I just don't think Miami cares. And I believe Virginia is, I believe they're like number two or three in the nation in the red zone. So the key is going to be limiting explosive plays, because Miami's not good in the red zone either. But I think that they can force a couple field goals and keep that within 17. But I think it'll be an ugly game. The next spot I have here, TCU at Texas Tech. Line's right around a touchdown, over under 58.5. TCU care after, you know, they have to win out, but are they going to be emotionally let down? Texas Tech, what are they?
I had a Texas Tech donor that I've known for 20 years jump into my DMs this week and tell me that Kingsbury and the coaching staff, all of them, been told to, you know, clean their shit out and get ready to sell their houses and get out of town. So take that with a grain of salt. You know, usually that's somebody that's pretty connected in the program, but you know, TCU's on a hangover spot after losing to OU. This is not a good spot for them. Kenny Hill is leading like five or six players, like really, you know, talented starters on this team that are questionable on the injury report. And it's just said that, you know, they're not going to play this week. And they lost Darius Anderson for the season during the OU game. So, I mean, it's really a bad spot for TCU with these injuries and maybe possibly sending Kenny Hill and some other starters. So we go back to the same stat that led us to take OU in the CW9 last week, which was OU's ability to have explosiveness with the deep ball and in the passing game and on passing downs. TCU ranks 122nd against pass explosiveness, and Nick Szymanek and Texas Tech, I mean, they're not OU, but they're still 29th in explosiveness, and they should be just good enough to cover the spread in this game. So I'm on Texas Tech. I want to get that 7, though. I'm watching it kind of float around and want to make sure I get the best line before I fire.
Game's gross. Nothing for me.
They're all gross.
Not the FCS.
By the way, breezy, 51 miles an hour, crosswinds at 22 miles an hour.
Okay. I mean, that will impact Texas Tech a lot.
Yeah, it would.
So, no thanks. SMU at Memphis. Memphis laying 11.5 here, over under 76. It should shatter. What do you see here, unless there's a lot of wind?
You know, Norvell's been in the media this week saying, you know, that it's been hard for him to get his team into rhythm because they've had games canceled due to hurricanes. Their first game was pretty heavily dominated by some weather against ULM. So Norvell has mentioned that it's hard to get his offense in sync because they've had so many stoppage in the season, and now they're coming off of a bye week. So I'm not sure if that helps. I'm not sure if that hurts. So Memphis's destiny to play UCF is going to be a win either against SMU or East Carolina. They don't need to have both. They can drop this game to SMU and still beat East Carolina. So I'm not sure really where the motivation is. Plus, all I can hear about is Mike Norvell being the talk of Tennessee, Arkansas, some of these places that are going to have job openings or job openings right now, that, you know, he's turning into the second highest mentioned coach behind Scott Frost. So I'm not sure if there's some a little bit of distractions there going on. The current number, you know, at 12.5, that's the number that I have. S&P Plus makes this game at Memphis -6. So there definitely is value in SMU. And, you know, SMU's on road travel again. They've lost the last two, and they've only covered one of their last five. You know, both teams have high-powered explosiveness and efficiency. Memphis just plays a little bit better defense. I go back to that SMU-UCF game that I know both you and I were watching, and just SMU should have beat them. They just had so many stupid drops. It hit them right in the hands, and they would just turn their head and drop the ball. They just couldn't complete a pass, and very frustrating game. You know, from the SMU standpoint, I'm wondering if they could just make a couple of those catches this game. They could really catch Memphis.
Yeah, they don't seem to be a well-coached team. They have all the talent in the world, but yeah, they make a lot of mental errors. I would lean SMU on the number, but not a great spot. Minnesota at Northwestern, Northwestern minus 7, over under 44. Probably doesn't sniff, but what do you see here?
Nah, I have no feel for this game. Both teams mirror each other in the advanced stats. You know, their offense explosiveness, both of these teams are dead last. So if you're watching this game, it's going to be pretty boring. Mid-tier in efficiency, the difference is Northwestern's rushing defense actually ranks in the top 25. So that should be the difference in the game. The total has come all the way down to 41. There's rain, 42 degrees, and 15-mile-an-hour winds scheduled for this game. So it's going to be a nasty, nasty game.
Yeah, Northwestern will probably win in overtime. Here's a game that I played already. I played it at 10. Michigan catching 10 at Wisconsin, over under 41 and dropping, I believe. You see anything here? Do you like the Wolverines at 10?
We are looking at a live total of 39. So, yeah, this thing is dropping like crazy. So you and I are going to be – yeah, I think we talked about this early in the week, and then here we are. I think we're going to be opposite of each other this week. So I'm going to be back in the Badgers here. Chris is the only one that's gone down to a 7, but it's a minus 115. So by the time you listen to this pod or by the time you read the CW9, there may be some flat Wisconsin's numbers out there. So, you know, for me – I have this game at 6, so I definitely want to get the best number possible because I thought it was too high in the first place, but S&P Plus has this at 12. Biggest difference between these two teams is that it's secretly, like people don't really understand this, that Michigan has like a top 5 rush defense when it comes to S&P and success rate, but they're 109th in defending ISO PPP on the ground, which means they can, you know, you're only going to get 2-yard gains, and then all of a sudden the team that they're playing could bust a 60-yarder. And so that's really kind of been a problem for Michigan this year. And the Wolverines, you know, I mean, that's something that they can get exposed on here in this game. They're also 109th in first downs. They're 105th in third down conversions, you know, compared to Wisconsin, who's number one in the nation in third down conversions. And I think next week I think Minnesota is a great spot for me to take against Wisconsin. But this week, I'm going to look for that 7. I'm going to try to buy it flat, and I'm going to be with the Badgers this week.
Yeah, you can be on 7, but I mean, I have 10, so it's different. But
yeah, absolutely.
I also don't care about Wisconsin. It's a lot of Wisconsin stats. They played Little Sisters of the Poor every week. So, I mean, they haven't played a legitimate team yet. What's their best win? With Northwestern?
Number 19, Fresno State, according to S&P Plus.
Yeah, I mean, that's early in the year too. And you mean?
FAU. Sorry, I got my F's mixed up there. Yeah, Florida Atlantic, number 19.
Great win. And that's when FAU was terrible. They're playing a lot better now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm not a believer in Wisconsin, and I think this game will just be low scoring. I'll take 10 all day. LSU at Tennessee. We talked about that earlier in the pod. You're going to be on LSU. I think, you know, Tennessee's quit. LSU blows them out. Do you see anything else there?
I think what I'm interested in is, the amount of resistance in the line with the amount of money that's coming in on LSU. So it really kind of reeks of maybe there's an upset, not an upset, but maybe a cover coming by Tennessee. And so I'm not sure if I'll buy out of the LSU because I did get a good number at 14. But, for the Vols, for LSU, you know, their linebackers, they got a couple linebackers sitting out. One of those is Arden Key. Listed as questionable, not supposed to play. There's a lot of rain forecasted in this. But what is the effect of a college football team after a coach is fired, right? Like the Oregon States of the world, like you and I have talked about this before, applies to college basketball, applies to college football, is that when these head coaches get fired, for some reason, the team seems to band together at least for one game and play out of their gourd. Now, the problem is everybody that was playing for Tennessee a month ago really isn't playing now, like Dormady and some of their other guys. So I guess if you're hungry for action, S&P Plus has this game at 10 and FPI has it at 9. So I guess there's supposed to be value in the Tennessee side. So if you're hungry for that, just make sure you get the best line.
And here's a game I played. I think Georgia will be flat here. Historically, teams that have been upset late in the season as top 5, or next week they haven't been successful against the spread. I played Kentucky plus 21.5. I think they can stay within that number. Over under 51. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the other side on this, and it really goes back to Kentucky's defensive stats, and that is 94th in adjusted sack rate. These are all rush defensive stats here for Kentucky. 94th in adjusted sack rate. Can't get to the quarterback, which means Fromm's going to be able to, you know, mask the fact that he kind of sucks. 109th in opposing rate, 114th in power success, 97th in stuff rate. So all of that means is that Kentucky is really bad at controlling the line of scrimmage and getting stops when it's like 0 to 2 yards, which is something Georgia might be trying to get back on track with when, you know, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb only had 20 carries total against Auburn. I'm not sure if they're trying to run it up to 24 or at least cover the 21.5. But, you know, I'm not going to be placing any money on Kentucky in that defensive line.
Navy at Notre Dame, Notre Dame minus 18.
Yeah, I want to back Navy really bad, but the number's far off from what I have. I mean, I have it at 25, and I think S&P Plus has us around what the number is right now. My biggest problem is Navy's – I love how Navy – we should just name it Navy quarterback, right? The blank name on the back of the back of the jersey.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah. So Notre Dame's you know, they're top 10 in rushing yards per attempt, and Notre Dame has huge offensive explosiveness and big advantages against the Navy defense. The Navy defense can't defend this kind of explosiveness whatsoever. Yeah, it also shows Navy being 115th in opponent yards per play. That's bad. That's really bad. So Navy is going to allow Notre Dame to chew up all kinds of yards. Also, Navy's outside the top 100 in third down conversions allowed, which means the Irish should be able to move the chains when they need to move the chains. So, I mean, I don't want to get in the habit of backing this big, you know, this big favorite right here with Notre Dame. But at the same time, I'm just not seeing what I need to see out of Navy to pull off one of these classic games against Notre Dame where they just catch them sleeping.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not a great spot. I mean, because Notre Dame might not be up, but yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it either way, but you raised some good points. So, I mean, let's go to the lightning round here. I'm just going to name some of the biggest favorites of the weekend. Let me know if you see anything in any of these games. So if Oklahoma is minus 35 at Kansas, got wins there, might impact Oklahoma. Fuck Kansas, by the way. Illinois at Ohio State, that line's taken off. I think they're minus 41. They probably win by 60. My thoughts on that game is that Urban Meyer probably wants to run it up to get – you've seen how Ohio State's benefited from that in the past. Now, Penn State minus 26 at home against Nebraska. Oak State minus 21 at home against Kansas State. USC minus 16 at home against UCLA. Vatek minus 15.5 at home against Pitt. These games are gross. Hardy also minus 17 at home against Maryland. You see anything worth noting in any of those games?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma State's going to make the CW9. Kansas State's 94th in defensive pass S&P, and they're 116th in success rate on defending the pass. So those are pretty bad numbers against an Oklahoma State team that you know can expose anybody when it comes to passing the ball. I totally agree with you on Ohio State. They are now in some sort of role where they're going to have to pull, you know, a 60-point win to get the committee's attention to keep them, you know, leading the charge. They're probably smelling blood in the water. The fact that they could slip into the number 4 spot, wouldn't be surprised there whatsoever. Baylor has my attention because quarterback Kyle Kemp for Iowa State is questionable. I still think Baylor's playing hard. They just can't protect the ball. KU at 38 is going to be a buy for me. The weather there is just absolutely terrible. Winds blowing as fast as they possibly can up there in Lawrence. S&P Plus has this game at 24. I shook my head at this. I could not believe they would have OU and KU just not that far off when it came to their ratings. So I was a little bit shocked by that. KU in 38, I just think that's too many points, and I'm actually going to make my first Kansas play of the year on that. So of all the games you mentioned, that's what I got.
Gross. Okay, let me. I did want to bring up something I mentioned earlier with the red zone defense. Virginia is actually number 9 in the country in red zone scoring percentage, opponent red zone scoring percentage at 71%. The ahead of them, UTSA, Vatek, USC, Wisconsin, South Alabama, TCU is number 3, Army's number 2 at 66%. Team's been so lucky. Number 1 is Troy, 58% opponents. That's all they're scoring in the red zone this year. They lead the country for what it's worth. And then something else I wanted to check off was Florida State and La Monroe. We mentioned them earlier. Florida State, I love how this is the saddest moment in Florida State history is they made La Monroe play the rescheduled game at later in the year so they can get bowl eligible if Florida State finishes 3-0 to get to 6-6. It's so sad. If I was La Monroe, I would have made Florida State go there, but they have to go to Florida State. I hope they beat them, and then La Monroe becomes bowl eligible and Florida State is not. But let's get to 3-out here. As far as bowl motivation, I was looking for you to give us a game or a team of someone that is bowl motivation, that, you know, that is motivated by becoming bowl eligible. I'll give you one, one spot that I like, and that's UTSA. So the UTSA is playing for bowl eligibility. They are playing Marshall at home. Games around a pick. The UTSA has one of the best pass defenses in the country. Yards per average, I think they're top five. Pass efficiency overall, pass efficiency defense, top 25. And Marshall can't run the ball. And Marshall's top two receivers are questionable. So I think UTSA wins that game. And they are playing for bowl eligibility. Marshall already is. That's one game I'll give. Do you have anything here?
No, you're exactly right. UTSA is going to be the play. This number's kind of flopping around zero. It's going from 1.5 to 1.5 on the other side, so make sure you get the best number. UTSA is definitely the play. You nailed it all with the motivation for the bowl and everything. Game's played in the dome, so there's no reason to worry about any kind of weather going on there. But, yeah, definitely it's going to be a meet-meep weekend. They're going to get a little bit of love. It's going to be the Roadrunner probably popping up on my timeline at some part of the day around 7 o'clock central. So
cool. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you I wanted to get your thoughts on is Florida UAB. So this game is pretty fascinating. And, you know, I think that the UAB is right around 50 in S&P plus, and the Gators are below 100, or they're actually below UNLV and Rutgers, I believe. And they're actually favored in this game by 10.5. If you look at who's ineligible for this game for Florida, I mean, they're scholarship players. I think they have over 20 that are unavailable. Their offensive line's been horrendous. Their starting center's now out for the year. Their tackle's going to be out. The last time the Gators were less than 14-point favorites against a non-Power 5 team, 1989. They're laying 10.5 here. I think UAB can win, but I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts on that game because it's a fascinating game.
Yeah, it's impossible to cap UAB because these point spreads, every game that they've been in, they've beat the closing line easily by one or two scores. So, I mean, they have not really had any problems whatsoever. This team's on a mission. They don't even care if they qualified for a bowl. They're still kicking people's asses. My problem with this game, I put in the Sunday morning coffee that I had this game rated at 14.5. It's been sitting at the current number all week. I think it opened 11.5, sat on 11. It's now sitting around 10.5. I'm going to get involved in this game. I'm going to get on UAB. But my problem is it would have been around the number that I wanted when the $250 openers popped up on Bet Online. I tried to hit them a couple times, but no, it's going to be a play for me. It's not going to be as big of a play. Because of that, I still can't see Florida beating anybody in the country by 11 points. So, yeah, definitely UAB. They're on a mission.
Okay. And the second for second down here, we had someone.
Hold on. Before we do that, I do have bowl motivation notes. They're real quick. I posted these in Sunday Morning Coffee last week. And if you guys look at Sunday Morning Coffee this week, I'm going to have a whole bullet point section about who has bowl motivation. Now, let me define this real quick. This is a team that's sitting on 4 or 5 wins right now, and they're facing a team that has 7, 8, 9 losses, something like that. Some team that's completely out of it versus a team that has 4 or 5 wins and desperately has to have this win. So this week, that applies to Old Dominion. They're taking on Rice. South Alabama, they're taking on Georgia State. Arizona State, taking on Oregon State. And Idaho taking on Coastal Carolina, Idaho and their swan song for the FBS there, and BC taking on UConn. So key into those games because those are teams that can reach a bowl and they're facing teams whose seasons are over.
Perfect. Thanks for those notes. And then the look-ahead lines, someone asked this on Twitter. Someone also asked about some of the lines that were out there for teams not to make the playoff. It looked pretty edgeable. But do you have any comments on look ahead lines or that?
Yeah, I made some notes on all these. So Ole Miss, Mississippi State, the Rebels are on a hot streak right now. And I think they win this weekend, doing pretty comfortable fashion. At the same time, I don't think Cowbell covers the game this week up against Arkansas. It's just such a bad spot for them, and who the hell knows what Arkansas is going to bring to the table. Hopefully they can play some sort of decent game. So the point spread right now on on Five Dimes is 13 for this game, and I actually have it at about 10. So there's already value in the Ole Miss number, and if things play out this weekend the way I think, which is an Ole Miss victory and a Cowbell non-cover, that game won't be 13 next week. It'll be down below 10. It could be like a 9.5. So I think there's value in taking Ole Miss now on Five Dimes. The other one that caught my eye, Miami going to Pitt. I have this game at 15. It's at 17, plus 17 for Pitt on a Friday night game. It's 7 o'clock. We can depend on the weather being bad. Miami hasn't been out of Florida. I can't even remember the last time they played outside of Florida. If they win this weekend against Virginia, which they should at least get the win, they're going into this game undefeated. They can take a loss to Pitt and still show up and play Clemson for the playoff. So the motivation with these players playing in possibly 20-degree weather is just such a fantastic spot. So Pitt's got my attention. Number's too high at 17. Other than that, I didn't have much going on. The Texas A&M LSU game interests me, other than the fact that both programs won this game off Thanksgiving Day pretty bad. They got it moved to Saturday. Is this someone's last game as a head coach? I think it is, not because he's going to get fired, just because his family's been so much. I think the second this game's over, I think his time at Texas A&M is done. The game is way too high. I think it should be at 11, but someone's also got one foot out the door, so you don't know how he's going to show up and what they're going to pull off. So other than that, all the other numbers looked pretty on par.
And then anything on the hedging of the, it looked like there was some bets out there for this team not to make it, or they looked like they were mispriced.
Yeah, they absolutely are mispriced. So I guess it would depend on, I'd have to get that list up. I didn't have, give me a half second to go through our Twitter, because I favorited that tweet. I said, this is really good. I went and looked for the lines on one of the offshore sites and I couldn't find it. So
yeah, neither could I. But whoever put that out, yeah, if you have access to those are all, hit them all, because you can hedge all of them. So let's get into third down, and then we'll sign off here. And we know we're going to be at about an hour, but we had some really good stuff in this podcast, so thanks for sticking with us. Third down is our Moneyline Underdog Parlay, and I'm going to go with, yeah, we got to hit this, set this every week, but I'm going with Duke plus 220. Against Georgia Tech. They could stop the option. I think they win, bowl motivated. Georgia Tech, Sandwich City. What do you got?
Yeah, good one. You can read more about that in the CW9 for me. I'm going Arkansas, plus 370. This is not a homer pick. I was already into this pick because of what Mississippi State sandwich spot between Alabama and the Egg Bowl. I think Arkansas gives it one last hurrah for their coach who has me blocked on Twitter. I can't wait for him to be fired.
Perfect. So there you have it. Woo Pig Suey and the Dukies. And man, that's an ugly one. Duke football and Arkansas football.
1994 national championship in basketball.
That game. Yeah, there you go. That pays out 14-1. So hopefully we can hit that. Thanks for listening as always. Make sure you check out the CW9 on Friday. Six pack Saturday, Sunday morning coffee, Sunday futures piece next week, and catch us next week for more episodes of The Gen and Juice. And I hope all of you out there have a profitable weekend. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.